The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay, so good evening. And today's talk will focus on one of the basic topics of meditation practice in much of many forms of Buddhism, but certainly going back to the earliest form of Buddhism, and that is meditation on breathing. And the reason for this topic is that starting Friday, I'm going to begin the Dharma practice series, a day-long kind of 9:30 to 3:30 series that I do once a month for about 8 months, where we'll kind of slowly go through the instructions that the Buddha gave on the meditation practice on breathing. He has 16 stages that involved in steadily going through working with the breath, deepening the experience of meditation with breathing until reaching a point of liberation. And so what I'd like to do today is to relate to you a little bit about these 16 stages, what this path is. Because as instructions that he gives, I think of as a journey. And so we embark on a journey with the breathing, and it's not an external journey, you know, going off on some trail and path someplace, but it's more like an internal journey that involves a variety of changes and insights that happen here and now in this experience that we have of being alive right now. And that journey has four stages. So these 16 steps are divided into four groups. And the beginning group begins with very simple instructions on paying attention to your breathing. And then as you get familiar with the breath, then the instructions unfolds and deepens. These four stages that are described. So each of them has four steps, four stages with four steps in each stage. There's a pattern to these four steps. And the pattern is that first we experience things. The most simple way of saying it is we really experience our experience, really are present, really feel and sense and are there for the experience. The word experience is very different from the word thinking about. So it isn't so much we're thinking about the experience, but we're almost as if we're feeling it. We're feeling our breathing. We're feeling our body. We're feeling our emotions. We're kind of being in the experience of it more fully. And then each of these four stages ends with something in the family of relaxing. Isn't that nice? So it begins, so you experience, and then you relax. Usually in English, the word that's used is tranquilize, but I'm a little bit reluctant to use the word because of somehow the connotations that we have are, you know, I don't know, the associations with tranquil, you know, you take a tranquilizer or it's just not quite, but I think calming or relaxing, these different things. And this journey could be seen as a way of progressively relaxing, calming, tranquilizing, deeper and deeper, more subtle areas of our life. And there's a pattern going through these stages. The first is really to experience your body. In the first stage. The second stage is to experience your mind. And the third stage, not so much your mind, but your mental activity. And the third stage is to experience your mind, not as an activity, but more like a state, the state of the mind. So relaxing for mental state, calming the mental activity. The word is not relaxing the mind, but liberating the mind. So it's in the family of relaxing, but it's much more powerful, the idea of liberating. And then the last group is a very interesting word called relinquishment, which I'll talk about later. So we experience, and then we do something that's in the family of relaxing as we go through this. It begins with the body, mental activity, the mind, and then a much deeper movement of relinquishment of the deeper tendencies for attachment. So I know this is a lot, it kind of seems kind of complicated, I apologize for this, but this is how it is, then I would like to convey this to you. So the begins with just knowing your breath as it is. The way they describe it is you know when you have a long breath that it's a long breath. You know when you have a short breath that it's a short breath. And many people who meditate start becoming aware of the different lengths and speed in which their breathing is occurring. Sometimes you can feel very tight and fast the breath. Sometimes the breath is relaxed and very soft and very expansive, and it just feels very long. Long in-breath, long out-breath. Some people have pointed out that one of the really preeminent ways of relaxing is to take a little bit deeper breaths than you normally would. Just kind of breathing a little bit more fully, and then especially breathing out more fully than usual. And not too much, because if you do it too forcefully or too much, then it's tiring after a while. So just a little bit, I find just a little bit more than usual. And it can be very relaxing for the whole body to do that, for no other reason that it takes some focus to do that. You have to kind of really be engaged in the breath to kind of keep it intentionally longer, a little bit longer than usual. And so as you keep your attention doing that, your attention is not going to feed your neurosis. Isn't that nice? Or, you know, I apologize if that's the wrong word, but you know, your obsessions, your concerns, your preoccupations, that often are the source of a lot of our tension that we carry with us. So if we keep focusing on our thoughts and the ruminations we have going spinning around and around, we often can build up more tension. It doesn't settle us. But if we can somehow move our awareness, our attention, from the thoughts that kind of obsess us, away from that to the breathing in a full way, then there's not so much energy feeding the obsessive kind of thoughts, and they begin to die down. As they die down, the connection between thinking and the body begins to be separated a little bit more, and the body has a chance to relax. So the first step is just to know your breathing. And as I said, meditators after a while get pretty familiar with the different speed of the breath, the length of the breath, getting to know. And you can be aware of a lot of other things. You can be aware of how smooth the breath is, if it's choppy or smooth. You can be aware of where in your body the breathing, movement of breathing or the sensations of breathing are strongest. And it's very interesting to watch how that shifts over time. Because different tensions, different emotions that we have seem to lock in or activate different groups of muscles around our torso. And so sometimes it seems like the chest is really constricted and there's no movement in the chest as you breathe. Sometimes the abdomen is held really tight and only the chest is moving as you breathe. And it's very, can get very subtle, start noticing the ways that our muscles, our tension, our holding patterns interferes with our breathing. So the beginning stage is to get curious and interested. And the interesting thing about this is that if you can do that consistently, one breath after the other, you start getting settled. You start getting calming down, and you start getting focused here in the present moment. As you start kind of being more in the present moment and less drifting off in thought, then your mind becomes a tool. It's become something, or your attention becomes a tool that you start using in productive ways. And one of the ways to use this tool of attention is not just to be aware of the breathing, but as you breathe, open up your awareness to become aware of your body as a whole. What's going on in your body? So you're still breathing, but you start becoming aware of the tension, the holding patterns in your body, the stiffness you have, the looseness, the softness, the warmth, the coolness, whatever's going on in your body. And it's kind of a natural thing that will often happen in meditation, that as people get calm and settled, a little more focused on the breath, the first thing they start kind of becoming aware of and highlight is what's going on in their body. So the instructions then say, as you breathe in and as you breathe out, experience, sense, feel your whole body. And some, it takes a while to learn how to do this, but it's very pleasant to stay kind of aware of the bellows of the, you know, movements and the sensations of coming and going, of in-breath and out-breath, and at the same time kind of relax and open and feel your whole body in a relaxed, open way. A little trick that I like is kind of to feel the whole body is to kind of imagine that there's a tension that's radiating from the center of the breath out into the edges of the body. And just feel the whole body as it kind of does its thing. As you get more and more centered on the breath, more and more relaxed, we start becoming aware of more and more subtle movements and sensations that go on as we breathe, as we sit there, as what goes on. So feel the breath, get to know it really well. It takes a while. As you get to know it better, then get to know your body as it's sitting there. Become familiar with that. But keep breathing. And then keep breathing, and as you breathe, relax your body. That's the first kind of part of the journey. Get to know your breath, get to know your body, and then relax your body. That's a very simple thing. The word that this text used for the body, I'm translating the body right now, is literally says the bodily formations. And that's a kind of technical word that means whatever part of your body, whatever sensations there are in your body that are there because of what your mind does. So if you're really anxious, you know, your shoulders might be up. Then that's called a bodily formation. That part of the body has been formed or created, in a sense, by your mind. If you're tense in your stomach, if you're, you know, a variety of different things, tensions, for example, that you might feel, are called bodily formations because they're created by the activity of the mind. And so that's the kind of part of the body that we have the most, we can have the most effect on. We can have some role in helping to relax the bodily formations. We might still have pains in our body that we can't maybe do much about, but at least the parts that's created by the mind, we can start to soften and relax. So feel the breathing, get to know it. As you get to know that, get to know the body. And as you know your body and better, then look for the opportunity how you can soften your body, relax your body. You don't have to sit there and just be tense. You can kind of let it become soft. One little practice I do is to imagine that all my muscles in my body, I release them against the edges of the bag that holds them, which is the skin, right? So it's kind of like the skin is, you know, it does a pretty good job holding everything in, most things in, pretty nicely. And so the idea is to kind of let, you know, your skin, your bag will hold you quite nicely. You don't have to kind of hold yourself together. Your skin is there to hold you together. So just let go into the skin. So I don't know if that will work for you, but that helps me to relax. Just let go. So the muscles fall away from the bones and let the skin kind of, the bag kind of hold it there. So all through this, the idea, the constancy, sometimes if you have constancy in your life, if you have stability in your life, one thing like that sees something through, it's very reassuring for our psychology. You know, if there's a lot of chaos, it's kind of, you know, it can be more challenging for our psychology. And so somehow stability of one thing that sees things through is very helpful. And so the one thing we're doing in this practice is staying with the breath. Being with the in-breath, being with the out-breath, feeling the breath as it happens. It's kind of like a wave that comes and goes, and we just keep staying with it. Maybe kind of nurtured by it, comforted by it, steadied by it, focused on it. You stay with that rhythm as we do these other steps. As the body relaxes in a deeper way, and as we get more focused, then what begins to arise is joy. And, or what's in the Buddhist word is called, in the ancient language, Buddhist language, Pali, is piti. So not, you know, the English word piti. It means joy, and usually translated as joy. And think of it this way. If you take an object, or take your fist, and make a really hard fist, and you hold it for a really long time, and it's so much it really hurts, and you feel like it gets numb, and it's really, you can't wait to let it go, but you have to hold on really tight. And you're holding on, holding, 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 and finally you're allowed to release your hand. As you release your hand, maybe because the blood flows better or the muscles relax, there's this vitality and energy and tingling that comes there that feels kind of good, that can feel good. There's a kind of a joy, kind of a pleasure, kind of a delight in the hand, finally, to be released. It's a little bit what happens as we start getting more and more concentrated and relaxing the body, is we release a certain kind of pleasant energy into the body, into the system, that the Buddhist tradition likes to call joy. And sometimes it can be very mild, tingling and warmth and pleasure. Sometimes it can be quite intense. And some people will call it ecstasy or rapture. And so the instructions here is after you relax your body, begin now experiencing the pleasure or the joy that comes from this process. As you do that, then at some point, you feel the joy, you feel some pleasure, you're settled, you feel contented, a sense of well-being, calm. Then notice your mental activity. And this is also something that kind of follows naturally for many meditators. As we get more and more settled, we become aware of what's the coarsest thing left. And at some point, what's coarsest and most active is our thoughts. And you become much, much more aware of your thoughts. They stand out in highlight. And rather than kind of just following your thoughts, getting lost in your thoughts, believing your thoughts, engaging your thoughts, you start kind of like, it's kind of like you, I don't know, it's kind of like you step back and you say, wow, those are thoughts. Wow. You know, rather than being in the thoughts, like being in an argument, right? Like you're lost in the argument. And then you step away and people you're having argument, they're still arguing with each other. But you step back and you look at them and you say, oh, look at them. They're arguing. I don't know. I'm not arguing now. I'm watching. And I don't feel like I want to be in there anymore. That argument is, you know, they're arguing about who the other party's presidential candidate should be. And I don't care who the other, you know, why are they arguing? So you step back and you have some distance. So as we get deeper and calmer, we get some distance from our thoughts. And the other mental activity that goes on, we see it for what it is. And then the instructions are keep breathing and just become better aware of what kind of mental activity is going on. The speed of your thoughts, what you're thinking about, what you're feeling, different emotions, different states of mind that are going on. And then, as you do that, at some point, when you feel like you know it well, then relax. Isn't that nice? I think it's so comforting. Relax. Calm the mental activity. And there, we can have an intentional role sometimes in just kind of releasing the force, the energy, the tension in the mind that's connected to whatever activity we have. So we relax. Relax that mental activity as we get to know it. Then the instructions are to go on to the next group, and the mind gets more steady and still. And now there's an interesting instruction, which is to gladden the mind. So to gladden. We don't use the word glad too often, or gladden. But feel a certain contentment and happiness about this process that you're engaged in. Allow yourself to be delighted in this. Because the delight often comes kind of naturally because it can be such a relief to not have your thinking mind in control of you. And so many times our desires, our aversions, our fears, our doubts, our concern about self-identity and issues of self kind of keep us kind of locked in. And it's hard, not to get pulled into them, sucked into them and involved in them. And it's such a relief to finally have that quiet down enough and have a kind of a healthy separation from all that, that we feel like now finally we have some kind of control or some kind of freedom from all those things that kind of were grabbing us before. And at that point, the Buddha said, enjoy it. Isn't that nice? Take your time to enjoy that freedom. Some people don't give themselves a time, partly because there's still mental activity going on, more subtle, but the conditioning can be so strong to judge, to be critical, to be have shame, to have, you know, to have fear, to have all kinds of things, that we keep going back so easily into that realm. But to feel that, to allow yourself to feel the light of not being there, strengthens the freedom of not being there. And as we start feeling kind of the light in this process, and it feels really good to be settled, to be connected to our body, to be connected to our mind, to relax the body, to relax the mind, it starts feeling like we're getting home. The here, right now, is a home that is portable. You carry with you. You're here. You're present. That's very difficult to feel when we're involved in the past and the future and our concerns and anxieties and fears. And it can be very satisfying to finally have this refuge of being here right now. That can allow us then to get more concentrated, to get more stability, to get more composed. And the Buddhist tradition puts a tremendous emphasis on letting the mind become stiller and stiller through becoming concentrated. And so then the instructions are, as you keep doing this, staying with your in-breath and the out-breath, allow yourself to get more concentrated. Which means you really give yourself over to the breath so the mind gets really steadied. It doesn't waver, it doesn't, less and less agitation, the mind jumps around more, less and less to things. The mind kind of just feels there. And some people report the mind feels like a very peaceful mountain lake, very still, very peaceful. Some people feel, kind of swum underwater, sometimes it feels like a peaceful place underwater, just right there. And some people kind of feel really peaceful in this concentrated state, and when they get less concentrated, it's almost like your head comes up out of the water. And then you get concentrated again, it's like you sink down this beautiful, peaceful place. And you know, when if you've ever done that, like skin diving or something, and I used to do it as a kid, where I would go underneath and turn myself on the back, and it was so peaceful under there. And I'd look up, and there were all these waves. I was far enough down where I was, you know, maybe 4 feet, 5 feet down where it was peaceful. But above, there was these choppy waves. And above that, maybe wind and all kinds of things. And if I put my head above the water, then I had to deal with the waves breaking and all that. And it was peaceful down below. So it's a little bit like that. As we get more and more still and concentrated, it's kind of like we kind of go deep into this kind of peaceful, happy place, content place. But then if we lose the concentration, we kind of float up again into choppy waters, and then we kind of sink down. And then in this very peaceful place, quiet place, steady place, we can feel that the mind is really free of its choppiness, free of the waves, free of the agitation. It's a certain kind of, it's liberated in a certain way. And this is the instructions now is breathing in and breathing out, know the mind is liberated. I think what it means is a temporary liberation. It's not the kind of the ultimate liberation that Buddhism points to, but to really appreciate that the mind is no longer caught in anything. It's a phenomenal thing to have a mind which is not caught. And so to have this kind of come into this peaceful place and say, this is possible. This is maybe a birthright that we have. I didn't know it was possible to have a mind which was unagitated, unafraid, not wanting all the time, not needing things all the time, not concerned what people think about me all the time, not telling stories. I didn't know it was possible to have a mind that was peaceful, luminous, clear, open, happy, peaceful. Wow, this is great. This is kind of a liberated mind. This is great. And then the journey continues to the last tetrad, the last group of four. And now from this kind of very peaceful, steady place, the instructions are breathing in and breathing out, keeping that breathing going, become aware, have insight into impermanence. This is like one of the key insights of Buddhism, to really see how things arise and pass. And as the mind gets, it's a paradox a little bit, as the mind gets more and more steady and still, so the mind, awareness doesn't move, doesn't change so much, doesn't feel like it's just there, then what it sees is that everything is changing. When the mind is very busy and active, it so easily succumbs to the delusion of permanence and thinks about things being permanent. kind of relates to things, this is how it is. But as the mind gets more and more quiet, everything starts being seen as constantly changing, arising and passing. And a very deep experience of this, seeing the deep changing nature of moment-to-moment experience, then leads to a less and less interest in being attached to all those changing things. Less interested in picking them up with greed or clinging or fear or resistance. There's a greater capacity of the mind to just be open in an open channel where things just pass through, thoughts pass through, ideas pass through. Nothing clings, nothing holds on. And so we start having this disinterest and start, you know, in clinging, disinterest in our drive to have and to want or resist or to hate that might be kind of deep in our mind or have fear. And so this journey, then the last step of it, is from the wisdom that arises from a peaceful, quiet mind that sees the constant change of our life that goes on, and learning from that peaceful place and that calm place to lose interest in many of the things that we're attached to. Then the final stage is to make a choice. And the choice is to relinquish that attachment. And the way I understand the word relinquishment here is that it's not just simply letting go of something, but it's to say, I'm done with this. I no longer believe in this. Yes, I could let go for a moment, but I don't want to be involved in this kind of activity again. I kind of renounce my interest in this. It might come back, those attachments and those clingings, but there's been a movement of saying, kind of like, enough is enough. I think it's a very, in Buddhism, it's considered a very mature movement of a spiritual practitioner to have the wisdom that some things are not worth being involved in anymore. So to give you an example, it might be that you have a particular attachment to winning the California lottery. And some people have strong addictions there. And after a while, you have the wisdom and seeing, you know, after a while you start losing interest. You see how impermanent your money is as it goes in and doesn't come back. And at some point you say, you know, you realize, okay, I'm not going to, you know, play the lottery this week. So you let go for that week. But the next week you have to deal with it again, the temptation for it. But to relinquish means I'm done with the lottery. I'm not going to do this anymore. It's a bigger choice. So where this kind of choice, relinquishment of attachment, of clinging or resistance or even of fear, relinquishment of being caught up in self-identity, where it's wise to do and not too wise to do is up to you to find out. But this process of deepening and quieting and stilling and then seeing what's really what's here in the mind hopefully gives you the wisdom or the perspective to understand for yourself, enough of this. I've had enough. I've done enough of this. And I think most of you probably have that kind of experience in your life without meditation. Sometimes just doing something long enough, over and over and over again, it loses its allure, its promise, the seduction, and after a while, I'm done with this. You know, desserts. You know, the first serving of dessert was good. The second serving was okay. The third serving was not so good. The fourth serving was sickening. And you, after 100 times of overeating dessert, enough, I'm done with this. You learned your lesson. So I don't know, I'm just making up examples, but the idea is that don't listen to my examples. The idea is, do you have your own examples of how you've learned over your lifetime through familiarity, through wisdom, through seeing it clearly, that I've had enough of this. I don't want to be involved. This behavior doesn't serve anyone, doesn't serve me, and I'm ready to renounce it. And so this process of meditation involves that movement at the end. But it's a little bit different than ordinary life experience that brings us to that point, because it comes to that point through a very deep stillness in the mind, subtleness in the mind, that allows us to see into the deeper structures of how our mind works than is possible in ordinary life. The deep attachment to self, self-image, self-representation, the deep attachment to comfort and desire, to safety, the deep attachment to conceit that many of us carry with us in funny ways, and start seeing some of the depth, and then from those depths to learn to relinquish or decide to relinquish is one of the great things in practice. It's a sign of maturity. So all along you have your companion. All along you have your friend along. And your friend that stabilizes you, that helps you with the ups and downs as you go through this process. It's not an easy process, you know, it's not. And your friend that accompanies you is your breathing. And it can help steady you, it can help give you courage, it can help see you through difficulties. It's always there. Just stay with it. Stay with the breath. Trust the breath. And trust yourself with the breathing. Just be with the breath. It's so easy to be seduced that other things are more important than your breathing. But come back. Just stay with, trust your breath. Let that be the center. And there's an art to staying with the breath. And you can also be aware of what goes on around you. You don't have to kind of have, you know, blinders on and not notice anything. But when you're staying with the breath helps you stay fluid. I think of the breath as the great lubricator. Because if you get tense, the breath gets tense. The breathing gets tense. But if you keep your breathing from getting tense, keep it fluid and relaxed, it's actually harder for the mind to get tense. And so just trust your breath. Stay with the breath. Come back to it. So I've been doing this breath meditation, focusing on it for 40 years. And I love it. And I do it in my meditation. I do it in my daily life. I find that it's a great companion for me that teaches me much about my life. It's often the first indication to me what's going on for me when my breathing begins to shift, the pattern shifts and all that. And then learn to keep it relaxed, keep it soft, helps me go through the day in a much more relaxed way than I probably would if I ignored my breath. The breath is a really good friend, a companion for us through our lives. And so these 16 stages of breath meditation is a training in learning to use the breath as your friend. So it becomes your companion that's useful and supportive as we go through your life. So in the course of these next 8 months on Fridays, I will we'll go through it much more slowly and with a little bit more precision than what I did today. So I hope that the overview was something you can follow enough. If you couldn't follow the whole overview well enough, there's only one thing to remember, or two things to remember from it. Experience what's going on and relax. Isn't that nice? If you do those two things, you'll go really far. Really experience what's going on, as opposed to thinking about it. Really experience it. Take the time and relax and see what happens. So we have about a few minutes, 5-6 minutes left. Do you have any questions about what I said or want any clarifications or anything? Yes, so we have a mic.
Can't wait for the day long now. I was wondering, how is this different from mindfulness meditation?
Ah, okay. How is it different from mindfulness meditation? I think was it last time or 2 weeks ago when I was here, I gave an overview of the basic instruction that I teach here, which is different from this process here a little bit. They overlap. So if you can listen to that talk, you get an overview of how I like to teach meditation. You asked a question, how is it different from mindfulness? There's hundreds of ways that mindfulness is taught. So it's hard to compare. This is one way that mindfulness is taught. It's called, the Pali word is anapanasati. Sati means mindfulness. It's mindfulness of breathing in and out. So it's one way of practicing mindfulness. And the Buddha, when he gave the instructions on this, said, this is how you fulfill the four foundations of mindfulness, this is how you fulfill the seven factors of awakening, that all these 16 steps fit into the other instructions he gave for meditation. So the way that I teach mindfulness is, in fact, with a lot of emphasis on the breathing. But then, if anything else is more compelling, you let go of the breath and you pay attention to that phenomena. With the 16 steps, there's a little bit more of a program you're following. You're still centering on the breath, but rather than going to what's more compelling, you kind of see, you get yourself focused on the breath, and then you start to talk yourself through these 16 stages, either by guiding yourself through it or recognizing them as they occur. So there's two different ways. Both of them are quite good, and I teach both at different times. I like the 16 stages because it really gets people, hopefully, very familiar and connected and in love with their breathing. So it's easier to make it the center of gravity. But I like I like to use that. The other way I teach mindfulness is to use the breath as a center, but then be ready to leave it at any moment's notice if something is in your experience is calling for your attention. I like that too, because that gives a lot of respect and care to really noticing in detail what's going on in your life. So there's two different ways, and hopefully it's not confusing this year. Is that okay? Any other questions?
Thank you. Will you be recording these this day so we can...
Yeah, we usually do record it. And it really depends on whether someone comes who knows how to record it. I don't know if someone's coming who knows how to record.
I use counting with my breath and... sometimes I think I don't want to count anymore. I just want to notice the breath like you're saying. Yeah. And then I think I'm not doing it right.
Well, if right is counting, then you're not.
So counting isn't always right.
Right. There are many ways of being with a breath. And I did counting for years, and then I stopped. And I haven't done. Occasionally, I count still. I go back to my if it's useful, but mostly I don't count anymore. Counting is very useful. So what's interesting in Buddhist practice is not what's right and wrong, but rather what's useful. So for you, it might have been useful to have counted for a long time, and it might still be useful from time to time. But maybe you come to a point where it's not useful anymore. Or it's not useful all the time. Maybe you start this meditation with it and get you settled and then you stop. And then so now maybe it's more useful to notice.
Yeah, I think that's probably what's happening.
Great, that's lovely. Feels like a natural process. Okay, well, great. So I hope that your breathing can become one of your best friends. And breathing is great. Thank you. Thank you.